Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to Relentless Pursuit International Radio Show with your admirable, exemplary, exquisite, distinguished, accomplished, superlative, transcendent, distinctive, incomparable, magnificent, paradigmatic, pulchritudinous,
Philandus.
Huh?
What are you talking about? What are you doing?
I'm introducing the radio show.
No, with that accent and those words.
I just thought it would sound good if we spruced it up a little.
If we what? It's 8:30. Ain't nobody got time for that. We got to get this show on the road.
It's the Relentless Pursuit International Radio Show with your hosts, Philandus Harris
and Tamika Sanders. Relentless Pursuit is a faith-based, young adult radio talk show created to bridge the gaps between racial, spiritual, and social divides. We discuss controversial issues that directly hinder the millennial generation from pursuing their God-given purpose.
We want to showcase young adults who are relentlessly pursuing God and their passions in the form of ministry, entrepreneurship, and through their gifts and talents.
Our goal is to equip our listeners with biblical principles that will nurture their dreams and catapult them into their divine destiny.
It's a relentless pursuit.
Good evening, everybody. This is your host, Philandus, and
Tamika.
And we just want to thank you all for taking out your time again this week to tune into Relentless Pursuit. We also want to give a special thank you to our network owner of MCD Network, who's Coach D. So tonight we have a pretty special segment that's going on here. We wanted to dedicate it to Mother's Day, even though Mother's Day was yesterday. We want to say a happy belated Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. If you're on the line or if your mother is listening or if you listen in the rebroadcast, just happy belated Mother's Day. So this segment is dedicated to revealing the mother's perspective on different battles that we've overcome, specifically Tamika and I, but also if you tuned in last week, we interviewed Miss Stephanie Cozzolino. We helped her to promote her book as well that she just wrote about a month ago, My Father and I. It was a really powerful show. Her mother was on the line, and God just really moved. And so if you tuned in last week and you heard a little bit from her mom, we also have her back on the show tonight, Miss Diane Regalado. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hello.
Yeah, so go ahead and just say hi to our listeners, if you would.
Hello, everyone out there. I'm excited about this opportunity again, and I just pray that God will use me, use the right words to come out there, and that maybe my struggle and what I went through with my daughter, maybe it can help you. So to God be the glory in that. Thank you.
And also, Ms. Diane, just give our audience just a brief summary of Stephanie's story, just for those who weren't on the line to hear last week.
Well, there's so many facets to her book, but the one thing that we focused on last week was the molestation that she suffered, and it was at the hands of her stepdad. So it was that whole process of going through that. And, you know, there was never a doubt that she, like I said, she didn't tell me. I figured it out. I guessed it the very next day. And so there was never, you're lying to me. I'm taking his side. It was never that. It was me trying to deal with it, trying to, okay, I got this under control. I got this. So, yeah. A lot happened, but, you know, I can say honestly that through her book, she has a new book out. It's called My Father and I, and you can go to StephanieCozzolino.com and order it. And there she just goes through the whole process of that. She explains, you know, how she was, God restored her, redeemed her, and how he's using that aspect of her to help bring deliverance to other girls, other women, you know, grown women that haven't gone through that, didn't tell anybody, or, you know, she's even encountered people that blocked it, and, you know, one word triggers it, and it's like, oh, my gosh, the floodgates open. So, yeah, a lot of good has come out of it. God has used what was bad to turn it around for his good, and he's getting the glory out of it.
Absolutely. That's so powerful. I'm not going to jump ahead of myself, but if you guys didn't have a chance to tune in last week, we do have the rebroadcast available on the website here. And so also tonight we have my mom on the line. You guys know my story. If there are any first-time listeners, basically my story is that I came out of a lesbian lifestyle, and I was the girl that looked like the guy, or if you're familiar with the language, I was a stud, and I also had issues with transgender identity. I thought I was supposed to be born the wrong or the opposite sex. I had abandonment issues, rejection issues. I also experienced molestation in my childhood, and so we're going to be hearing from my mom tonight, and her name is Mrs. Dorsey. If she would introduce herself and say hi to our listeners.
Hi, everyone. This is Eva Dorsey, Philanthropist's mom. I'm excited to be here tonight, and I think we're going to have a good time with this discussion and listening to the mom's perspective tonight. And I thank everyone for calling in, and let's get it going here.
All right. And Tamika, did you want to introduce your mom?
Yes. So we also have my mom on the line who's going to be giving her perspective. A few months ago, we did a show on daddy issues, and I shared my personal story of struggling with the absence of my father. My parents divorced when I was young, so there was no father present in the home. And so my mom is just going to share her perspective of just seeing me go through the process of healing and being restored for that. So, Mom, if you could just introduce yourself, tell our audience hello.
Hello, everyone. I'm Sharon Sanders, Tamika's mom, and I'm excited to be here.
All right.
No, I'm joking. Right. Well, now that we have everybody has been introduced and we have some idea of what's going to be talked about tonight, I wanted to start with Ms. Diane because she's the fresh off the press, basically. She was on here last week, and I had a few people that were listening in. They wanted her to share more, but I told them, you know, I wasn't going to have them share too much because I want you guys to just support my sister Stephanie in her ministry and purchase her book. If you want to know all the juicy details, go get the book and read it. I promise it's worth it. So I just want to start off with just asking you a few questions, Ms. Diane. So, you know, you mentioned earlier that Stephanie, she was molested by her stepdad. And I know that I've done some studying and some reading on my own in different books about the effects of sexual abuse on children and how their behavior changes, how their mood changes, how their demeanor and their character changes sometimes, or how it can change. And so I imagine that after experiencing that, you know, you said that you guessed it. She didn't tell you. You just kind of had a mother's intuition and you knew something was wrong. And so what about her behavior, maybe towards you or towards other people or just in general, what about her behavior changed after the molestation took place? What did you witness change in her?
Well, the reason I can tell you that I noticed it off of her right quick the next day is because I saw the shame right away. And because of my own, what's happened to me in my past, I recognized that face right away. I recognized how she was looking. And then the fear, there was fear also on her face. So I was like, nope. And I'll give you a little background. I'll give you a little background because the day after it happened, the night after it happened, next morning, like I said, for those who weren't listening, I had to take her stepdad to work. And he had to be to work at 8 o'clock. She had to be to school at 8:45. So we had a daughter. She was a couple months old. And he gave our daughter to her. And, you know, she was laying on the bed watching cartoons, and he kissed our daughter. And then he kissed her on her cheek. And it was, I just looked at her reaction, and I saw her reaction, and it was, her eyes were open, and she was like, when is this going to be over with? So immediately she was uncomfortable. Her body became very stiff, and I saw the fear in her eyes. So then I took him to work, and then I came back, and that's when I asked her. And I will tell you right now that I know that if I wouldn't have asked her, she would have never told me.
Wow.
Oh, that's all I knew. And then it just started, you know, it was just like I noticed her. I noticed her demeanor. She became, she tried to walk around with a happy face all the time, like she was really, really happy. But deep down inside, I knew she wasn't happy. She was covering it up. She was masking it. Then there was fear behind that. Then there was shame. And then the anger. Oh, my gosh, she got mad at everything. Her brother couldn't do anything right. Nobody could do anything right. But then she could turn it off like a light switch and then become very happy around other people. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was a range of emotions.
And so, yeah, so like whenever you saw her face change, whenever her stepdad kissed her on the cheek, you saw her face change, saw her body language change. So for you, was that kind of like a flashback thing to your own experience with molestation whenever you saw that?
Yeah. Yes. As soon as I seen it, I recognized it right away. I knew something happened. I knew something happened, and I had to ask her. And there was never a doubt in my mind that she was lying. I never said, no, maybe you mistook, this didn't happen. No, it was never that. I believed her. I believed her because I was the one that asked the question.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And so whenever she was, I'm sorry?
I wanted to ask her a question.
But go ahead, Philandis. I want to hear what you have to say.
Oh, no, I was just going to ask, whenever you saw that there was a pattern of these really high up and down, ups and downs in her emotions, like you said, she would be really, really happy, and then at the blink of an eye, she could become really, really angry. Like, what was your response to that? Like, how did you ask her what was going on, or how did you respond to that, or how did you approach that?
Basically, what I taught, I knew what she was doing. I knew what she was doing because I went through that myself. But with me, I wasn't able to express my emotions because everybody was always shutting down my emotions. But with her, she was able to. So all I could do was just talk to her, you know, calm her down, be around her. And sometimes I just had to let her be. But I recognized it, and it hurt. It hurt. It killed me because here I was still in this relationship, still in this marriage, when what I should have did, and I didn't say this last week, is I should have just called the police and had them arrested. That's what I should have done. But I'll give you the background of why I didn't do that, because it was done to me, the same thing. When the molestation happened with me, I told that very same night, and it got swept under the rug. So it was swept under the rug for, from the age of 9, and I lived with it all that time. So when I said that happened with Stephanie, there was a lot of mistakes my mom and, you know, other family members made. And I said, I'm going to do better than that. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to handle this. But in reality, what I should have did was call the police and had him arrested. But Grace, there's a reason. There's a reason why. And it's like Stephanie explained last week. Had that happened, she wouldn't have gone through this whole process, and we wouldn't be where we are today with a book written and called My Father and I, and we wouldn't be on this talk show talking about it.
Yeah. Right. I agree. You know, God works everything out for the good of those who love him. But I wanted to ask, like, during that time of Stephanie's adolescence, did you ever take her to get counseling or, talk with her? How did she learn to cope with the emotions, or were they just not addressed, or did you kind of just let her go through the emotions because, you know, you didn't know what to do, or how did you all handle that?
No, she never went to counseling. That's one thing she didn't do. We didn't talk. She didn't tell anybody because, well, of course, had she told, then here was the thing. That was fear-based on me, too. I never told her. I don't think I ever told her, you can't tell. But maybe she might say different. I don't know. But if that would have happened, it would have been a whole mess of things. So my way of handling it with her is the same way it was handled with me. I'm going to go ahead and take care of you. So what did I do? I bought her everything she wanted. I took care of all of the needs she wanted. She didn't lack for anything. If she wanted to go somewhere, I would let her go somewhere. That was basically me putting a Band-Aid on everything. Here, let's just take care of this boo-boo and it'll be okay. When it wasn't. But, you can only bandage things up for so long, and then it's like a volcano. It explodes. And when it exploded, there were things that we had to deal with. And it was really hard because once the final blowout happened, everybody knew. My family knew. Then I'm getting the finger pointed at me, you're a bad mother. You did this and you did that. And almost at the same time, I was trying to play this victim mentality. But what about me? Nobody cared about what it happened to me. But now because it happened to her, now I'm a bad person. I'm only doing what was done to me. So you see what I'm saying? It was really a really twisted thing. But I really believe that God said, enough. It's got to come out. It's got to come out. And it was the hardest thing to deal with. You know,
how
we have all these things. I'm sorry.
How old was Stephanie when that happened, when it came out? Or
she was already an adult. She already had her son and she had her daughter. So she must have been about 21. 22, somewhere around there.
And if you don't mind, that blow up, what triggered her finally coming out to say, this is what happened to me.
We got into a, well, you'll read it in her book, but we got into a physical altercation, and then I started it because she was dating an older gentleman that I didn't approve of, and he was 14 years older than her and 4 years younger than me. So here comes the daddy issue. You know, I seen it for what it was. I seen what he was doing, but she couldn't see it. She was blinded by it. So here's mom thinking I can convince her to drop him, and she did it. And when she did it, we got into this huge fight, and that's when everything came out. It was like there were no holes barred. It's like, okay, so you hurt me. Now I'm really going to hurt you. But, I mean, I look at it now, and I'm glad that it came out. I'm glad that it did.
Yeah.
It's hard to keep a secret.
Yeah, I can imagine that's hard, not just for her, but for you as well. And it kind of sounds like whenever there was this huge blowout, it was like, like an exposure for both of you. Like it was an exposure for what she went through and also for what you went through, and everybody was faced or forced to deal with what wasn't dealt with during your time when it happened to you, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so whenever it blew up and it came out and people were, you know, pointing the finger at you, what was their response whenever – you know, they had to face the fact that it happened to you, and it kind of, the way that things happened between you and Stephanie, that they kind of mirrored what happened to you. What was their response? Like, did anybody own up to anything? Did anybody take responsibility? Were there any apologies? Or was there just kind of like I'm going to step out of the way and miss the blame here? Like, how did that work?
No. With my sister, she did. She stepped up and she apologized, and you know, she took responsibility, and that was the one thing. I guess that the one thing with me is that I think they never believed me. They didn't believe me, but my sister told me, no, I believed you. Even though he denied it, he said, no, that didn't happen. She's not telling the truth. And even my mother, she believed me. But at that time, I didn't believe that she believed me, you know, that they thought that they were doing that. But when it came down to the final blowout between Stephanie and I, the other people were like, oh, it's just Diane. You know, she's just starting stuff, or she's just trying to play the victim mentality, and I can see that. Yeah, I think I was trying to justify my actions. But because I had already dealt with it, I think I was like, it happened. What am I going to do? I can't run around, being with a pity party, because I know I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't encourage that. Neither did Stephanie. That was something that was inside of them. The only thing that I can take from that is knowing that what I know now is that it had to have happened to them. They've had to have been molested at one point in their life, because who goes around and does that? You know, and it's the enemy is really tricky. And, you know, they're just basically acting out what was done to them. But at the same time, we can say they're grown men. They know better. But if you didn't get deliverance from it and you didn't get healing from it, then how are you going to stop it? This is more spiritual than anything.
Yes. And so, you know, I have heard of that before, and it is common in a lot of cases where the sexual abuser has been a victim of sexual abuse themselves. So I definitely have heard that, and you know, it makes sense. It may not be that they have a heart to hurt the people that they abuse, but you know, that still doesn't justify what's going on.
No.
But I definitely agree that, you know, in a lot of cases that is the case. And so I kind of wanted to go into another question here. So with the molestation, and we also talked about last week about how the dynamics of your relationship with Stephanie's biological father – were kind of unhealthy, unstable, and a little bit abusive. And so after your separation from her biological dad and then everything that transpired with the molestation between her and her stepdad, at any point, like, did you, I guess, kind of encourage Stephanie to, I guess, pursue a closeness with her biological father?
No, I didn't encourage her to do that because at that time he was, to be honest with you, he was more concerned about our son than he was concerned about our daughter.
Gotcha.
And she basically gave a background of that because he was in the military. There was no more, there when she was first born, he was gone the first year, you know, he was gone 6 months and then he came back off the ship and then he went back on the ship again. So by the time she was around him at a full-time basis, it was, she was already, her bond was with me, her bond was with her grandmother, and when we took her away, she cried a lot because we had to go to California. So he didn't have that closeness with her. So when our son was born, oh, you know, he clung to him because that was his little boy and everything, and then when we got a divorce, he was more concerned about our son. He wanted our son. Not that he didn't love Stephanie, but, you know, he never treated her well. No, I can't really speak on that because there was a lot of issues. But she was around him, and like she explained last week, that when there was a time that she went to go visit him and that he had been drinking and he was listening to music and he had her sit on his lap, she said she felt really uncomfortable. She felt really uncomfortable because she didn't know if he was going to do something. But he would have never did that. He was never that type of person. It was, all I can tell you is that I studied that man. I studied that man, and I just knew what his habits were. But it's really strange because their relationship, they had a blowout because there were some things that needed to come out. And there's some things that God wants them to deal with, you know, him to deal with. And it's really ironic that he doesn't pursue a relationship with her because he is the type of person that he is a hustler. Anything that he does, he excels at. And she carries all of those traits of him. She's like her dad. She gets out there. She doesn't look at any stop signs. You know, if a door is shut, she wiggles it to see if maybe I can get through this door. She's always doing something. And it's not because she's looking for accolades. It's because she's honoring our Heavenly Father. So,
right. And so,
yeah.
Oh, go ahead, Tamika.
Go ahead, Philander.
Okay. So I guess I was just going to ask, like, okay, so basically, you know, her relationship with her father was kind of just lacking for the majority of her growing up. And, you know, things were kind of rocky between you two because the blowout didn't happen until later on in her life, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. When she was
and
older.
So, yeah. And so with that and watching her go through all of that, you know, I'm sure that you came to a point where you know that, where you realized, like, okay, you know, she's not really close with her dad, and things between you and her are, I guess, not as great as they could be or not as great as you would like for them to be as her mom, because I imagine that, you know, every mom wants to have a closeness with their child, whether it's a daughter or a son. And so after all of that, what did the process of the restoration process, you guys' relationship look like? Did you initiate it? Did you attempt to reconcile, or did she attempt to, or what did it look like?
Before you answer that, Ms. Diane, I just want to interject. Before you answer the restoration, I want you to talk about after the blowout, where did you all relationship go after that? Was there a period of time that you all stopped talking or she distanced herself from you? What did the relationship
That's what I was gonna say before the restoration. After the physical altercation, it got so bad that the police were even called. She called the police on me, but I mean, I'm not mad at her because I probably would have did the same thing too.
But she dropped the charges and everything. And for that time, we didn't talk for 6 months. And I'm going to tell you this, and I don't mean this to be disrespectful. Those were the best 6 months of my life. And I'm going to say why. Because during that time, during the time before this, I was always, how do you say, I was controlling. I was a controlling mother. I was like, Stephanie, you're not going to go here. Make sure you come home at this time. You know, she had a phone. She had a cell phone. And on the ringer, she had that Inspector Gadget ringtone for me. And all her friends used to crack up laughing. Because that was me. And, you know, she had certain friends that would come around and they would come in the door and I would be like, not that one. Oh, Mom, no, not that one. Nope, nope, nope. One time she wanted a friend so bad and I said, nope, okay, I'm going to let you have this one. Sure enough, that one backstabbed and did some horrible things. And she's like, I should have listened to you. And I said, yeah. But what I want to get back to is the part of the 6 months being the best time because it allowed me to take my hands off, because here she was a grown woman living in her own house with her two children and pursuing her own life. And she was working, and I still took care of the kids. She'd come drop them off. We wouldn't say one word to each other, and they got in the car. But it wasn't until I was going to take a trip to California, and I know how my daughter thinks, and I was going to be gone for a week or two or something like that. So she comes over to the house. I know what her rationalization was. I need to make peace because what if I never see her again? What if she gets on that plane, you know, and she never comes back home? So I understood when she was coming and she was trying to talk to me, but it was in a defense, you know, still I'm still mad at you, a way of still talking to me. So when we spoke a little bit, but when I got back from California, we spoke even more. And she was still in this relationship that I did not approve of. But I said, you know what? I'm going to go ahead because I was praying, Lord, if this is not the man that you want her to be with, shut the doors. Because I knew what it was. She didn't have a relationship with her father. So here comes this grown man who already had his family, who had kids. You know, grown kids, and, you know, he was treating her right, saying all the nice things, doing all the right things, but I could see right through it. And I said, all right, you know what, I'm going to be this intel spy. I'm going to go ahead and say, you know what, when she said, well, I want you to meet him, I said, all right, I'll meet him. And I went with her, and the kids were at Chuck E. Cheese, and he comes and sits down next to her, and she's, like, introducing me to him, and I said hello, and he put his arm around her. Oh, that irked me. And I just said to him, don't put your arm around my daughter. In my presence, don't touch my daughter, because I'm not used to this. Yeah, but what I thought was he's a dirty old man. He's a dirty old man taking advantage of my daughter and her youth. So during this time, you know, I was around her and everything, and I was watching what he was doing. And she... like she said last week, that she couldn't go, nothing was going right in her life. Nothing was going right. She surrendered her life to God. She started going to church. And I started to watch her when she was in church. And I saw her praising God. And at that moment, God became more important than this man. So I would pray and pray. And ultimately, she ended the relationship. It was really funny because she came home. And this was after a 14-day fast. She told him, I'm not going to come to your house. I'm not going to come, you know, we'll see each other at church or whatever. And then she came home from work and she told me, she says, Mom, I got to end the relationship. And I said, why? And she says, because God said it's unevenly yoked. I said, well, do you want me to go with you? No, Mom, I got it. So she goes and she goes over there and she comes back 20 minutes later. And I looked at her and she says, you want to go get some dinner? And I said, well, what happened? She says, Mom, I feel like I broke up with the bagger at the grocery store. It's okay. I'm good. But that's how powerful our prayers are as a mother. When we pray for our children, don't let Satan lie to you and say, you know, oh, it's not going to work. You're not seeing it. God is working behind the scenes. And when that day
she went into the bathroom to take a shower, I was jumping for joy. I called my mom. I called my aunt. Thank you for praying. She broke up with him. It's done, you know. And then the rest is history. She reconciled with the children of her older two father, and they got married, and here I have two more grandchildren. So God is good. But during this time, if it wasn't for her being in church and if it wasn't for me joining the same church, us loving on God and allowing him to heal us. But at the same time, there were triggers. There were triggers. If I said one word to her, there came that look. She got mad. You know, she didn't want to be around me. She was irritated by me. It was a hurtful process. I'm not going to lie, because it was my daughter. I loved her. I wanted to be around her. I knew that I hurt her because I didn't honor what I told her I was going to do. I was going to make him leave, and I didn't make him leave. So I had to live with the repercussions of my actions. And, you know, there were times that I felt like she doesn't love me. She doesn't love me, but it's okay. She doesn't love me. She's still my daughter. And it's something that I regret. That it's something that I have to live with for the rest of my life, but there's no condemnation and there's no shame attached to it. When I go back and I revisit those things, I'm like, but God, you healed me. God, you took care of that. God, you're going to use this for a greater testimony. We're going to be able to help somebody else. That's how I can get out of that rut. But it was hard on my daughter. It was hard on her. And no child should ever have to go. No child. And I think that's why we're here today. We're here to share our testimonies for some mother out there that's listening that might have gone through this or is going through this right now. You got to do the right thing. You got to do the right thing. You got to walk away because this is your opportunity right now that God is giving you. He's opening your ears. You didn't come on this show by accident. He's opening your ears to hear exactly the words that are coming out of my mouth. And you got to move. You got to do something. Your child's life and their well-being and their emotional well-being, they don't got to go through what my daughter went through or none of these other girls here. So make a decision, and it'll be okay. He will take care of you.
Wow. That's powerful. You said that you answered all of the questions.
All the questions.
Just that one statement.
Thank you, Lord.
Yeah, so I want to take a moment to say that if anybody was just tuning in or you just tuned in within the last few minutes, we're giving our mothers a chance to share their perspectives on the battles that we've had to overcome, how they saw it happen, what they did in that process, and how that process has affected them. And we just spoke with the mother of our last week's guest, Stephanie Cozzolino, who just wrote her book about a month ago called My Father and I. And she experienced some molestation, and she also had some daddy issues. And we just had her mother to share her perspective, the part that she played in it, and how it affected them and what their process of restoration within their relationship looks like. So it's really powerful. I think that, you know, you really – have a powerful story as a mother to share with other mothers out there, even if they didn't go through your specific situation, just talking about how you prayed for your daughter, the mistakes you made and what you learned from them and how you kind of just had to tough through it when it was hard emotionally and it was painful. I really respect that fight. And I think that it's great that, you know, you can talk about that and you can own up to your mistakes and you can extend hope to other people. And
And I want to share one thing with Landis. I didn't understand this, but it was Saturday night. I was sleeping and God speaks to me in my dreams. And maybe you can identify with this, that you're sleeping, but in actual, he's talking to you. And when he's talking to you, your mouth is moving. The words are coming out of your mouth. Have you ever experienced that before?
Yes.
Okay. Well, now you know what I'm talking about. But I was hearing all these negative words, and I didn't understand what these negative words were. But all these words were being spoken, and now I truly believe, because I didn't know I was going to be on this show until yesterday, but I truly believe
that there was a reason why. He was giving me all the negative words. I was hearing them, but he was giving me the antonyms to counteract those. And I saw the words that were being spoken, and I saw the antonyms coming out of my mouth. And as they were coming out of my mouth, they were capsizing the words, the negative words. And I just said, wow. I said, wow, God. And then we were done. I was done. And he said, you're going to use these to speak to other mothers. Because whatever was spoken by the enemy, you're going to use these words to capsize what he said.
Yeah.
Do you
recall the effect of words that were being spoken?
Yeah. Words that mothers that have felt, you know, even as a little girl, you know, you're stupid, you're dumb, you're an idiot, you know, you did this, you know, all the condemnation, even the condemnation with their daughters. And all what I saw was the words, they were floating like on water. And you know when a boat capsizes, it turns upside down. So here's the waters floating. Here's the words, the negative words floating. But the words that were coming out of my mouth, the words that God gave me, the antonyms, were coming at those words and capsizing them, turning them upside down. They no longer held any more power, any more weight. And
wow.
I just, wow, God. And I didn't realize it what it was until just a little while ago.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I want to encourage mothers out there, you know, to continue to pray for your daughter if she has gone through molestation or is going through molestation or as an adult dealing with those issues. We encourage you to have that hard conversation with your daughter. Just to address the issue because it needs to come out, you know, and it's dangerous to hold in those emotions, the rage and the unforgiveness and the bitterness that comes along with that. So we want to go ahead and transition to Philandis' mom. And basically, you know, Philandis has a similar story as it relates to divorce and molestation as a child and the route that she chose to go into as a result of feeling abandoned or feeling rejected by men or feeling unsafe. And so we just want her mom to just give her perspective on Philandis' experience with molestation and how they dealt with that and then how Philandis' behavior as homosexuality affected her mom, period.
Okay. Well, good evening, everyone. I'm here to talk about Philandis. As far as the age that I started noticing Philandis presenting homosexual behaviors and bringing about relationships around me, first of all, I want to say I always supported Philandis. I saw things in her before she even came out with this to me, you know, from being a small child, I saw the male tendencies that she had as far as the toys that she chose to play with, the way she wanted to dress. I mean, I did the little cutesy girly things with the hair and the clothes, but when I let her reach out on her own to certain things, she always would choose the male toys, or if we went shopping, she always went straight to the little boys' department. So there were things that I saw before she even, you know, came out with this to me, but I always supported her because I never wanted to close the door on her. I wanted her to feel like she could come to me, you know, no matter what it was. I always wanted her to feel like she could, you know, talk to me and tell me anything. There were some things that she didn't tell me, which I found out recently, but I've always kept the door open because there were a lot of children at that time, which was around her middle school age, that were committing suicide, that were using drugs to cope, and I never wanted her to feel like she had to take that route. I always wanted to keep that relationship open and, you know, a trusting relationship where she could talk to me and things of that nature. So I was always supportive, even though sometimes I cringed at some of the things, like when she would bring her girlfriend home or whatever, but I knew that I had to be supportive. And through it all, with me praying to God for him to, you know, one day turn her into the young lady he sent her here to be, that's how I was able to deal with it, because my faith led me to believe that no matter what she's going through right now, one day this too shall pass. That was my take on everything with her. But it was painful at times because she would isolate herself, because sometimes she was rejected by her peers. You know, people, if we went out shopping, people would double take to see, is that a boy? Or, you know, people would make comments, and that would hurt me to the core because this was my child, but I never would show her that. But it hurted me to see her experience that. And she would stay in her room, listen to her music, write, read, or whatever. And I just wanted her to, you know, be a normal young person and go out and play. And she would do some things, but I still would see that she didn't want that rejection. So a lot of times she would isolate herself. So those things, I always had to pray for her. And I tried to, for us to do things together to try to compensate so she wouldn't be so lonely or by herself. So those things, she didn't spend the night at her cousin's house as much as, you know, how kids do. But she stayed to herself a lot, and I just tried to always be there, you know, for her to talk to.
Right.
And even in that, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. No, I'm just saying it was painful watching, you know, her go through those years and, you know, the different relationships, the disappointments I saw her go through with the little relationships that she had. And I just, like I said, my thing was to keep on praying and keep on loving on her, you know,
right,
no matter what. No matter
right.
what people in the family said, no, her schoolmates, people out in public, no matter what they said, I felt if I prayed and loved on her and was there for her, that she would be okay.
That's good. I wanted to say, when Philandis decided to come out of the lifestyle, can you just tell our audience, you know, how did you feel in that moment? What were you thinking? How did you feel? And how did supporting her process in that area look like for you? What did that look like for you?
Well, when she initially brought that up, I just wanted to make sure that she wasn't doing it because of things that were happening, because of rejection for people. I wanted to make sure that it was genuine, that she just wasn't doing it just so people would accept her more. And I was kind of concerned about that. But then, too, the biggest thing for me is, like, I knew my prayers were going to be answered one day. So, of course, I felt joyful, but I kind of had mixed emotions about it. I wanted to make sure, and I guess I kind of had those other feelings because when she talked about it, it's not like she changed overnight. Okay, I'm going to put all these boy clothes away, and I'm going to dress like a lady, and I'm going to get my hair done, I'm going to wear lip gloss or whatever. It wasn't instantaneous like that. So I kind of was like, well, I hope she's sure about it. But then I would have a little side conversation with God. Well, I know I've been praying all these years, because I used to pray for her every day when I dropped her off at school or whatever it was. I prayed all the time, Lord, please help her to be the young lady that you sent her here to be. And I prayed that prayer so much. Sometimes even when I didn't say it out loud, I thought it just the way I said it on the other day. So I was happy, and I was a little concerned because I didn't want her to feel like if she in fact was still going through those, having those feelings, that I didn't want her to just be trying to change to please everybody else and to be what they call normal. I want to make sure that this was it, you know. So
yeah, that is,
yeah,
I was doing it and delivering her. And so I want, you know, Philandis to also talk about, I know that she experienced some molestation in her childhood. And so she could just, if you all could just talk about that experience, you know, when did she start to actually, I guess, address it or talk to you about it? And how did that, how were you able, you both of you all able to deal with that? Because I know that there's some mothers that are listening that really want to know how to deal with it. They haven't dealt with it. So if you all could just
okay.
talk that.
Yeah, so actually, to be honest, I didn't start remembering that I even experienced any molestation until probably a year ago. And then
more recent times. Like, it was very recent that I started remembering. And the first time, I guess, that a memory was unburied, it came to me in a dream. And basically, there was a young man that was close to me, and in the dream, it was like I didn't have control over what was going on. It wasn't like a regular dream where you wake up and you know that that was a dream. It was like when I woke up, I felt like I had just experienced something for real. And so basically this dream was about me feeling like I didn't have any control over what was going on. And I was being fondled inappropriately and being exposed to this male's genitalia. And it was like I couldn't get out. I couldn't move. It was like in the dream I was conscious that this was happening, but I was also kind of like being forced to experience it. And so when I woke up, I was kind of just shaking. I was like, whoa, what was that about? And so I talked to probably after about 2 weeks, because it was so kind of traumatizing. I didn't even want to talk about it. I didn't want to think about it, because every time I thought about it, it kind of made me sick to my stomach. And so probably about after 2 weeks, I actually talked to one of my mentors about it, and she helped me to understand that what I was having, it wasn't a dream. It was like God was unburying a suppressed memory that I had, and I blocked it out because it was traumatizing. And so that was really tough. It was like once I came to terms that that had actually happened, I went through, I guess you would call it post-traumatic stress moments. Like I didn't want any guys touching me. I didn't want any women touching me. That was the first time I had really became aware that I felt like that. I didn't want to be touched by anybody really, but especially not people that I didn't know. And so I started going through dealing with that, facing it, embracing it. And then after I moved here to Texas, God started showing me, he started unburying all the other memories that I had, because I actually experienced the molestation on several occasions in my childhood, but I blocked it out of my memory, and it was all by males that were older than me. And so it made me very angry. It made me very kind of paranoid. I felt uncomfortable. I was ashamed. I felt dirty, and it's all of this stuff. And so that was what my experience is about it. But my mom can probably tell you something different, like I guess what her experience with me going through that and telling her that I went through it was.
Well, I will say what the things that Philandis just spoke on, those were things that I was basically unaware of, you know, because it's recent to me too to know, find out that she had been having dreams or things of that nature, and that there were different times in her life and different people who actually committed acts of molestation against her. Because since I too was molested as a child by a family member and didn't remember for years, I too started having dreams when I was about 13 about things, and the dreams just, they kept coming back. They kept coming back. And that's when I realized that this stuff, I'm not just dreaming, it actually happened. But when I did go to therapy, and the therapist told me that I had repressed it and blacked it all out, and some people never remember, but I started remembering. So it was amazing to me that Philandis had the same experience years later. But something that happened to her when she was really small, maybe one or two, I never told Philandis that that happened to her, because I was thinking she was too young to remember it and that we could go on with our lives and she would be okay. I didn't want to expose her to something that she didn't even remember. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how I handled that, because to me she was a baby, and I'm like, why would you? And she had a normal life. She was a happy child. So I didn't think that that was anything I had to mention. How she found out about that was other family members told her about it later on. And, you know, when she was old enough to, you know about that, they told her that, which, you know, of course, that created some issues in the family, because I felt that if she was told, it was my job or her dad's job as her parents to, you know, tell her about that.
So
yeah,
it hurt me so bad to find out that they're as protective as I was of her by what happened to me, because I always used to ask her, like, if anybody touch you or anybody, you know, do this or whatever, you know you're supposed to tell me. Don't be scared to tell me. Even if they say they're going to hurt me or kill you or whatever, don't ever be afraid to tell me. So I felt really bad that she went through that, and something she didn't remember, so I guess she couldn't tell me things she didn't remember. But I just felt bad. I felt like I had failed in protecting her, because when the things happened to me and I told my mom, it was like Diane mentioned earlier, it was pushed under the rug. You know, nothing was done about it, and I had to deal with it on my own. So I never wanted, you know, her to feel like I felt. You know, I didn't feel like I had the protection of my mom. So
right.
I just wanted her to always feel like she knew she could come to me and that I would believe her. And forgive me for saying this, I used to always say, if somebody ever touched my kids, I will go to jail for them, because I still had that thing in me where my mom may not have protected me, but I'm going to protect mine. So, yeah, that was difficult, you know.
Wow.
Knowing that those things happen.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I hear that a lot, even from my own mom, say that, you know, when things happen to us when we're little, they think that we're, since we're too young to remember it, that maybe it won't have an effect on me. And I experienced the same thing with parents getting divorced. I've heard my mom say that several times. You know, you were young. I didn't think that, you know, you remember, you know, there were things that happened in their marriage that I didn't start questioning about or asking about till I was 18. But my mom didn't think, you know, anything had an effect on me because I was young when it happened, and I wouldn't have remembered it. But, you know, our memory is crazy. I was telling my mom today, I said, you know, it's something about science that babies, their first interaction with humans builds their ability to trust and their ability to feel safe and all of that thing. And our brain takes on those memories before we can even understand what's really happening. And so later on in life, you know, those memories come to fruition when we're able to understand it and deal with it. And I think also I believe that God protects us in a way too, where he won't reveal those things until we're mature enough and have the people around us to be able to handle those issues and deal with them properly so that we can get the healing. And so so I definitely appreciate you for sharing that. I know all of this is very sensitive information for everyone, so I don't want to offend anyone, but I do want everyone to be able to, our listeners to be able to just get freedom in their own lives, in their own relationships with their family members, to not hide it, to take action and to talk about it and to address it and to forgive and to move forward in a loving way. So I definitely appreciate you talking that. We're kind of running out of time. So I don't know if my mom still wants to say anything. She didn't have a whole lot that she wanted to say, but I think from her perspective, she didn't really know the issues that I had. So go ahead, Mom. You want to talk about, say in one sentence.
Well, I felt like I didn't know that Tamika had separation issues from her dad. When we separated, I think Tamika was 3. But I just felt like in our relationship that, and part of me still feel this way, that I thought it would be better for kids to grow up in a single-parent home and be safe and happy rather than grow up in a relationship where there was no peace and there was turmoil and wasn't really a functional family. So when I left and we moved back here to Cleveland, like I said, Tamika was 3, and I felt like I worked really hard to try to give her and my son the opportunities that they would have had had they been raised in a two-parent family home. So, I mean, she was a happy kid, and she had a lot of opportunities and experiences that her friends didn't have, and So, and I don't even think Tamika even realized her daddy issues until she went to college. But as a kid, she never, and I guess I really didn't realize it because she went to see her dad every summer, I guess, what, about age 10. She started going down there in the summer. So I'm thinking, okay, and I never kept her from him or, you know, kept her from having a relationship with him. And he'd call and she, you know, talk to him on the phone during the school year, and then she'd go down in the summer. So I never really even realized that it was a big issue with her. But there was one time when I realized that, boy, she misses him more than I thought, and that was when she graduated high school. And I remember he was supposed to come up here for her high school graduation, but he remarried, and his wife had surgery at that time, back surgery. And she had just got out of the hospital, so he wasn't able to leave. And so, you know, with all Tamika's supported family here, was at her graduation, and with everyone being there, at the end of her graduation, she just broke down and just cried, because she said, my daddy isn't here. And then I think that was the time that I realized that, boy, she misses him more than I thought. But I still never thought it was to the extent of, you know, her having really bad issues with that. Because I felt like when the lady was saying at the beginning how, you know, parents need to do what they, you know, whatever it is to protect your children. So I felt like it was safer for us to leave than to stay. But sometimes when you make choices as parents, you never realize, even when you're doing everything you can to protect your child or to get them in an environment where you feel like they can flourish and grow and be, you know, healthy children, sometimes there are still issues that they still go through. So, you know, Tamika went through, I mean, I thank God that she never went through some of the issues that I'm hearing, you know, the other parents talk about, but she still went through a separation issue of not having her.
There was more than separation. She's watering it down. I had abandonment issues, rejection, still dealing with it, not being able to have healthy relationships with men. A lot of issues that I had that I think that were not, you know, brought to my mom's attention or she wasn't aware of or not even being able to relate to how I could have those issues. But we are running out of time. I'm very disappointed because I wanted to hear Coach D. She will buy us enough time. She's the only person that can do that. Buy us a couple more minutes to share some of her perspective and story.
Uh-oh. Oh, can you guys hear me? I'm sorry.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. Let's extend 15 more minutes. So that, because I would love to hear your mom continue with what she wanted to finish saying. And then I'll peace afterwards. But yes, this has been very, very good.
Okay, go ahead, Mom.
So I just felt like I didn't really understand or even know the extent to Tamika's issues with her dad. Like I say, she would go visit him every summer and stay down there the whole summer. And even then, you know, so I'm thinking, okay, so she does have a relationship with her dad. Some kids don't even see their dad. So, you know, she's good. I didn't realize until she got to college that it was really as deep of an issue for her and that she went through a lot of different emotions and a lot of different periods where she really – where it all really came out and she became aware of what was going on. And when she decided, but I know when she decided to, she felt like she had to go down and live with her dad. And that was one of the things that I didn't understand when she said that I have to go down here and live with my dad. And I felt like, well, why? You know, and I guess she, at some point, you know, I heard her on the broadcast, a few broadcasts ago when they were, you know, giving their testimonies and talking about their different issues of how critical it was for her to go down and like regain her youth to the point of where she felt like she left off with her dad and let him take care of her and you know, do all the things that she felt like she missed out on. But I do, one thing I remember her calling me and telling me one time that she was going to school, and her dad went in her room and said, "Tamika, I made your lunch. You know, I made your lunch." And that to her was a big deal. She said she broke down and cried because she always wanted to hear her dad say that. I guess when she was in elementary school, she said that a little girl came to school and said, "My daddy made my lunch." And for Tamika, and Tamika said she always envied that. Well, I had no idea of that. She never revealed that to me. So just to, and I guess it was kind of hard for me to realize why she missed her dad. So because, you know, I mean, I don't know, because there was never no evidence of that growing up. So, and that's when, and I would even say to her, well, I thought, you know, you saw him all the time. You never withheld from him. You talked to him all the time. But, you know, I guess actually living in the house and having that presence of your other parent was deeper. I never experienced that. I had both my parents. So I never, I guess, really understood the depth to what, you know, the effects that could have on a child, especially since she had some sort of relationship with them. So, but I do, her journey overcoming this has been a tremendous progress for her. And she even went, I think you went to therapy, she even went to therapy, I think, went to counseling for that on how to, I guess, get over her issues. I guess she had a mixture of issues of not feeling like abandonment issues, feeling like he didn't love her or she wasn't worthy of his love, or somehow she needed to earn his love, or I think part of Tamika's problem too was that he had other kids who he seemed to, because they grew up with him and was in the house with him, that they got more attention. You know, so I think because she was the child that wasn't with him, I think she's his only child that wasn't with him and grew up with him, that probably played a part in her feeling sort of like the outsider or abandoned, or that he didn't care as much for her because the others, he, you know, were raised by him. So, but she's made a lot of progress, and I'm very, very proud of her for having the courage. She and all, and Philandis too, I am very proud of these young ladies for having the courage to come out with their stories, and even more prouder that they trust God enough to help them through and deliver them from a lot of things, and are open to God's help and presence, and to realize that, you know, through God, that they can be delivered from a lot of their feelings and emotions, and very strong, and becoming very strong and young women. And I think that is something that I am very proud of them, because a lot of young people never get this far, or, you know, or don't even realize that they have problems and don't do a lot to try to overcome their problems or deal with them so that they can start the healing process and go through the whole healing process. Just, you know, just that they are aware and just trust God enough to help them through this. I really commend them and think that they're very strong and courageous young women.
I agree. Awesome. Well, thank you, Mom, for sharing your perspective. You know, there's a lot of emotions that go along with just, I imagine, even with Philandis and her mom sharing these, even with me and my mom earlier today, we were like, okay, maybe we're not going to have you on the show because we don't know, because there's a lot of emotions that go with it. You know, she has the way that she feels about decisions that I made to get free. We dealt with a lot of hurt. You know, she, I think at some point, may have felt betrayed when I went to go live with my dad, because she felt like she She did everything that she could to make me happy and to raise me to be whole. Why do I need him? But at the end of the day, I told her, I said, God created there to be two parents for a reason. You know, I can't just survive without him. I have to know who my father is, especially if he's alive. I needed to have that opportunity if it was possible. And so thank you, Mom, for sharing your story. And Coach D, we want to hear from you.
Well, I would say, ladies, this has been just a wonderful show, and it's just amazing how the Spirit of God connects. You know, you don't have to know a person. You don't have to necessarily know the whole story, but the spirits connect, because my shows for the last week were really about this kind of thing. I did a show on Tuesday that was talking about the princess and queen syndrome, and it was basically there's only one queen to a castle, and that's when the mother daughters begin to have that little strife, because the princess is now trying to come into her queendomship, but she's don't know how to work it quite yet because she's still in her mother's castle. And we talked about and then on Thursday we talked about that little girl, that little child inside. So everything that you guys were saying, and especially Diane, I just wanted to comment on, and then I'm going to make it very short. But as Diane was saying, is that she did what was done unto her. And the word knows that as generational curse. Because my mama did it, my mama's mama did it, my mama's mama did it, and the pattern just keeps going until somebody break it. And the breaking of that curse normally doesn't take place until somebody comes into the full knowledge of Jesus Christ. And when you come into that full knowledge is when you can begin to work through that thing so that you can stop that generational curse. You know, this molestation thing that everybody's talking about, it's coming out. It's nothing new under the sun. It's been going on probably even with our grandparents. And I'm talking to your parents, Valandis, because I'm your parents' age. But it was happening with our grandparents and our great-grandparents. People just didn't talk about it. And so now people are opening up saying, I don't want to be hurt no more. I don't want to go through this pain no more. So I'm releasing it. And I encourage people that are, so even my own son, I had things that I had to deal with. I'm very protective of him. You know, also like your mom was saying, Philanda, I'm very protective of my son because I knew what I grew up around. Thank God I didn't have to experience any of that from my parents, but I experienced the molestation from older cousins and family, friend-type situations. And so I'm real protective of my son. I mean, I'm so protective. So when I was hearing your mom say that, I was like, eek! You know, because you could be so protective, and like you said, so protective and still didn't know. And so that's for me as a mom, and as any mom, you know, that's that thing. But God is teaching me to trust him, to continue to plead the blood, continue to pray, to continue to just trust him in those situations. But like I tell my son too, because I've made some poor parenting choices, and I acknowledge it and accept it, that I did some things to my son that was done to me as far as my parenting skills, because I came from old school where kids was to be seen and not heard, and if you said something too smart, you would get threatened with getting your teeth knocked out or getting your head knocked off. I don't know if any of you guys came from that, but, you know, my parents, grandma, and so I took that same thing to raise my boys, and more so because I had boys, and I was a fear that my boys one day will cower me and they won't respect me. So when they were little, from the time they was, you know, real little, I handled them, you know, I harshly, meaning I just really made sure that they knew that I was mom and I didn't play. And even though I turned out, I think, okay, and others in my generation turned out okay with that type of discipline, I'm learning that really wasn't the right way to go about it, that the words that or spoken in that is a form of psychological abuse, really. And so I wasn't able to backtrack with my oldest son, who's 30, but with my 13-year-old, I'm backtracking, and I'm sitting with him, and we're talking through things, and I'm allowing him to share his heart, and I'm sharing with him that I don't want him to be a damaged man, that I don't want him to be damaged and going into society damaging other people, that I don't want him to be broken, and this is where we're going to begin to process through this. And I also share with him that I don't want him to take my garbage, that this is my garbage. It don't belong to him. And I'm, in essence, teaching him how to get a spiritual trash can to begin to put into the garbage can my garbage that I try to subject onto him because somebody else subjected their garbage onto me. We got to talk to our kids like that now because we're in a society now that's not hiding anything. Our kids can find out anything they want to. All they have to do is Google it. And they're seeing stuff that we've never imagined seeing when we were kids. And so we're not being honest with them. If we're not being open with them, if we're not sharing with them, they're going to learn somewhere in the streets, but they may not learn the truth. And so I just love what each one of you ladies, that you were transparent, that you were willing to share your stories, and that you continue to share your stories because you only played a part in the story. The story really is not yours to hold on to. Because when God brought you through it, it was the requirement is that you tell it to the next person so that they could get through. So I appreciate you, ladies. A great continue to put, this is the real stuff that you're not going to hear about in church. You're not going to hear about this in Bible study. This is the stuff that people need to know. We got so many people that are sitting up, and I love church. I have my own church home. But what I'm saying is we got so many people that's broken and damaged. That's sitting up in church, and they can't fulfill. They can't even walk in their purpose and begin to experience all of God's promises that they have for them because they can't get past the pain. And that pain needs to be processed. It shows like Relentless Pursuit, shows like Woman to Woman, shows like Processing Pain, and so many more shows that are willing to touch those difficult subjects so that people can be delivered. So thank you, ladies, and I appreciate you. Great show.
Thank you.
So with that being said, I don't know if Philandris or Tamika, you guys want to say anything else before I close us out?
Are we still on the air? If anyone had any questions, if they want to press 1, we definitely encourage you to ask any questions if you're, you know, processing how to deal with your personal molestation or how to address it with your children, please press 1. We'd like to hear from you. And if no one's asking,
if you don't have any questions that you want to ask on the air, you can post within the event on Facebook for Relentless Pursuit, A Mother's Perspective, and we will be happy to answer those questions there. We want to thank you for listening in tonight, and we want to invite you to come back next week at the same time, 8:30 p.m. Central Standard Time or 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we pray that you all have a productive week, and we love you, and God bless you.
God bless you all.
God bless. Amen. Well, thank you all for tuning in to Relentless Pursuit, and stay tuned if you would like this week coming up Thursday at 7 p.m. for Processing the Pain, and Mondays, again, at 6:30 p.m. Pacific Time, Relentless Pursuit, and Tuesdays, Woman to Woman, at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Thank you, and have a good evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Many times I can't see.